Greetings, friends. Those that may be joining today's podcast, today's talk at noon, it might be a little surprised that it's already been recorded. I'm starting a little bit early today. I have some preparation to do for our retreat that begins tomorrow. And those the talks from this our fall retreat will be posted online next week as soon as I can get to it. Today's talk is from an article that I first published, I think, back in 2014, and it is on the website, and it'll be linked on the YouTube page, called "The Buddha Taught Happiness." So the background on this is, in the beginning of 2014, I gave a series of talks that basically laid out the Buddha's teachings. And some interesting things came up during that, during the Sangha discussion, in relation to mostly some individuals' understandings and misunderstandings of the purpose of the Buddha's teachings and what he actually taught. And so the simplification of all that was that the Buddha taught happiness, and he did. Some of the misinformation comes from, and misunderstanding comes from, a misapplication of the Four Noble Truths and lacking the context in which the Buddha taught. He starts out by stating that, and it's often interpreted this way, as saying life is suffering. The word, the Pali word for suffering is dukkha. Dukkha means everything from mild disappointment all the way to extreme emotional and physical suffering, and it simply encompasses the whole nature of human life. Looking at the negative side of it, and there's a Latin phrase that points to that called via negativa, meaning you're teaching from the negative point of view. But and that's even that idea of negative point of view has taken on a negative context. When it's simply a useful tool when you're talking about something in that vein. So the Buddha certainly wasn't teaching that there's no possibility to experience any type of happiness in our lifetime. In fact, he was teaching just the opposite. He was teaching that if we can recognize and abandon our own contributions to stress and unhappiness, then no matter what occurs, from a well-concentrated mind, framed by the refined mindfulness that's developed through the entire Eightfold Path, then no matter what occurs in life, will not shake that mind, and the mind will remain at peace. And so some of the arguments that modern Buddhists will make is that peace is not happiness, and get caught up in the whole excited mind interpretation of happiness, meaning that we've developed or received something that enhances how we feel about ourselves in relation to the world. That's not the kind of happiness that the Buddha taught. The Buddha taught that true happiness lies in a calm and peaceful mind, and living a life that is disentangled from the world, and taking that a little bit further, that disentanglement means that who we are is no, our happiness is no longer dependent on what is occurring in the world around us or to us directly. We've ceased taking anything personal, and so everything that the Buddha taught is to recognize where our craving for a self-referential existence is established, and how once that's established, we cling to that, and that is the nature of clinging. So let me just read a little bit from the article, and I'll comment some more. The Buddha described awakening in very simple and direct terms. He used the word unbound or released as an unbound or release from clinging. And it's a very specific clinging, and it relates directly to dependent origination. Dependent origination states that from ignorance of Four Noble Truths, through 12 observable causative links, through that process, all manner of confusion, deluded thinking, and ongoing disappointing experiences arise. In a word, dukkha arises. because of clinging. Let me read a little bit. The Buddha was not concerned with presenting a scientifically provable Dhamma. He did not teach a Dhamma that was impossible to understand and develop. He taught a singular and well-focused Dhamma, accessible to all who would develop it. And the significance of that is, as the teachings of the Buddha developed, and even during his time, there was this kind of knee-jerk need, to reconcile the Buddha's teachings with everything else that was developed at that time, which was primarily based on the Vedas and the Upanishads, the precursor to modern Hinduism, which the Buddha studied and rejected as not leading to his goal. And then over the 2,600 years, every philosophy and religion that sprang up that was somewhat inspired by what the Buddha taught, and then claim that it was a Buddhist teaching, has tried to reconcile everything into this this notion that all Buddhism is the same thing, it has the same purpose, it has basically the same teachings, and it has the same goal. Much of what the modern Buddhism does not have its underlying philosophy of teaching a peaceful and calm mind, free of self-referential views rooted in ignorance, but rather, and this is, gets to very subtle levels, but rather the establishment of a self within the philosophy, meaning the philosophy has now been altered and accommodated and adapted in a certain way that allows for the continuation of self-referential views rooted in ignorance rather than recognizing that ignorance. And there's an article on the website called Modern Buddhism, A Thicket of Views. I won't get into that today because it'll take away a little bit from today's talk. So how can we know if we are developing the Buddha's Dhamma or a later adaptation or accommodation to the Buddha's original teachings? So the Buddha taught only in the context of Four Noble Truths. His very first teaching upon his awakening was the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the Sutta setting the wheel of truth in motion. And even the later developed schools will claim that the Buddha set the wheel in motion three separate times. And if you look closely, and that, the explanation of that is included in my new book, Becoming Buddha. The Buddha only, there's only one truth that the Buddha was concerned about, and that's expressed as Four Noble Truths. His very first teaching was that Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, where he taught the Four Noble Truths, and everything that he would teach for the remaining 45 years of his teaching career was taught in the context of Four Noble Truths, and to develop an understanding of the origination of all suffering. In other words, to develop a clear understanding of dependent origination, which is the one of the most, and probably the most wildly misapplied and misunderstood teaching. If you look on the internet and do a search on dependent origination, most every one of the modern teachers will teach something that relates in almost no fashion to the teaching in the Paticca-Samuppada Sutta, the teaching on dependent origination, and the many other teachings. The Buddha didn't only teach dependent origination once. There's so many significant suttas where the Buddha references dependent origination, and always consistent with the Paticca-Samuppada Sutta. Most of the modern applications use the word dependent and change it to interdependent, and there's obviously two different meanings to that. And they use the changing of the word from dependent to interdependent to then create an overarching Buddhist doctrine of interdependence, interconnectedness, and interbeing, which all of those themes contradict the Buddha's direct teaching on dependent origination, which is simply from ignorance of Four Noble Truths, all manner of confusion, deluded thinking, and suffering arises. And so from you can see from that initial alteration to the Buddha's teachings, anything that follows can only continue that ignorance. And so we create these intricate strategies to continue to ignore that basic ignorance by the initial ignorance of how the Buddhist teachings on dependent origination. So when you start from that point, when you're encouraging ongoing ignorance, anything can be substituted for the Buddha's teaching, any purpose, any goal. And so the notion that the Buddha taught a negative Dhamma and was overly focused on suffering is completely misunderstood. The Buddha taught to recognize our own contributions to suffering, so that we could bring our contributions to cessation. Another way of teaching that is that our thinking is wrong. The talk that I gave last night in Frenchtown was on the Vitakasanthana Sutta, and in that sutta, the Buddha concludes with the phrase that we gain the ability to think what we want to think when we want to think it. We gain the ability to think what is skillful, not what is unskillful, not what would continue to lead to more ignorance, more suffering, more confusion. And so the overall teaching of the Buddha is to recognize and abandon ignorant thinking that leads to ongoing unhappiness, and to develop the quality of mind of right view, thinking rooted in a true understanding of the way things are, thinking rooted in Four Noble Truths, and so develop a life of lasting peace and happiness that relies on the way we think. And when you understand the Buddha's teaching correctly and in the theme that he taught it, which is, it is our thinking that is the problem, and so the solution is to recognize and abandon wrong thinking or wrong view and develop right thinking or right view, then even the direction of the Buddha's teaching gains clarity, and we can fully engage in understanding, we can fully engage in the Eightfold Path based on the understanding that this is the path that the Buddha taught for developing a life of lasting peace and happiness. And it helps avoid all the other alterations and adaptations that have been added to the Buddha's teachings. One of the ongoing arguments, especially with the hundreds, if not thousands, of charismatic teachers that have arisen, claiming an interpretive understanding of the Buddha's teachings rather than what he actually taught, is that we then follow teachers that really didn't develop what the Buddha taught. They taught something that was influenced by the need to continue to ignore ignorance. And entire Buddhist doctrines have arisen from that one need, and it's very subtle and very difficult to see, but that one need for a self-referential ego self to develop very powerful but very subtle strategies to continue to ignore its own ignorance. So we've had a substitution, an almost infinite number of substitutions to what the Buddha actually taught. And even the strategies used to justify and explain away how these different teachings arose and how they are still authentic is remarkable. But when looked at, and I go into this quite a bit in the new book, Becoming Buddha, how these different strategies arose and how they've been justified and explained away, you can... Let me put it this way. On clear investigation, the willingness to look at things clearly within the context of the Buddha's teachings, it's clear how these adaptations have been made to the Buddha's teachings. And so the adaptations that have been made to the Buddha's teachings also have adapted and accommodated what the ultimate goal and purpose of the Buddha's teachings, and that is to develop a calm and peaceful mind and a life of lasting peace and happiness no matter what's occurring. So that's today's talk. I'll have another talk next Wednesday. And again, our retreat's beginning Thursday, and I'll put up the retreat talks sometime next week. Thank you for joining. Peace.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions, Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace.